If that doesn't knock your socks off, I don't know what will. That is just fabulous. And that's just the beginning of Lucia de Lammermoor. But wow. Oh, to hear Pavarotti. Oh, my gosh. Skoda was wonderful in this. And this is a 1967 recording from Torino. And it's with the Orchestra Sinfonica e Coro di Tonio Torino della Rau. Francesco Molinari Pradelli is their conductor. Wow. That's a great one, and that's just the beginning. Well, I have in the studio Matthew. Hi, Matthew.
Hi, good to be here.
Good. Good to have you. And Matthew's going to tell us more about Lucia and the production that Opera San Jose is putting on starting the 10th, right?
Exactly.
Okay, Matthew. Let's see. Now let me get you. I'll put. There you go. Let me take this off first. Okay. Are you comfortable there, Matthew?
Yes.
Good, good, good. There's something about opera that always produces baritones with beautiful speaking voices.
Well, we do have to carry those low masculine tones, I suppose.
Yes.
So
you really do. I congratulated Matthew and on his performance in Streetcar Named Desire, and I'll just tell you that I had mentioned it before on the air, but he was in the performance and he was absolutely fabulous. He really did a wonderful job. And it was just an indication of how good the performers are in Opera San Jose that they put on such a marvelous showing of Matthew, and his Stanley was outstanding. And I hope you got to see it because he's played several roles. This one, I guess, was maybe a little bit of a stretch, Matthew, or no?
No, this is kind of right in my wheelhouse. This is a role for me that I would say is something that I would like to do many, many times in my career. It's perfect in my voice. I really feel like I understand the character, like a lot of the characters that I've portrayed here at Opera San Jose. Some of the more malevolent ones like Scarpia,
right,
and
exactly.
Desenrico and Stanley Kowalski are kind of things that I can sink my teeth into.
Okay. Well, I'm going to ask you about Lord Ashton a little bit.
Okay.
He's kind of a mixed character, right?
Exactly, yeah. Right, well, in the novel, the antagonist for Edgardo de Ravenswood is he's the tenor in the opera, and he's the hero of the story, you could say. But my character, Enrico, is like an amalgam from the novel by Walter Scott of basically of all of Lucy Ashton's brothers and her father, who in the novel is the main character, who's always the foil to Edgar, and also Lucy's mother, who is really the most vicious character in the novel.
I'm going to ask you about that a little later on.
Sure.
Because this was a Sir Walter Scott novel, and what Donizetti has done with it is kind of interesting. He's really kind of taken the same. But we'll talk about that in a little bit. I kind of want to remind folks about you, the performer. So give us a little bit of your background. You have been everywhere. And your repertoire, I mean, your list of accomplishments are really daunting.
Oh, I appreciate it. I graduated from Northwestern University. I have my undergraduate degree and my master's degree in vocal performance and literature from Northwestern University in Chicago, Illinois. And I'm an alumnus of many of the nation's premier training programs, you would say, the Wolf Trap Training Center and the Santa Fe Opera Apprentice Program,
yes.
just north of where we are right now, the Marilla Opera Program at the San Francisco Opera, Central City Opera, Sarasota Opera, Chicago Opera Theater. I've apprenticed in many places.
You have, and I might add, you know, you are one of the folks that were at least leading up to some of the finalists in the Metropolitan Opera auditions, and you're on the auditions, You're in the auditions of the movie.
That was pretty.
That's where I first saw you.
Okay, good. Well, the year that I happened to be in the national semifinals for the Metropolitan Opera National Council auditions, there was a documentarian there making this movie called The Audition, and perhaps some of you have seen it. They followed around many of the singers. Mm-hmm. And you could see it in the movie theaters at the intermission to some of the Metropolitan Opera in the movie theater screenings. And then they released it on DVD as well. But an interesting. I had to sign a little waiver right when you walked in the door. Like, all of your pictures are going on the movie now. So that was fine. It was fun.
That must be really a strain. I don't know how they pick. Everybody is so talented. You know, it's just like, you know, I don't know how you do it, quite frankly. I'd pick every one of you folks in there because it takes something to even beat to reach the standards that you are, and everyone is just a fabulous performer.
Well, I mean, the network of talent identifiers that the Metropolitan Opera has throughout the United States is really an impressive sort of life force of its own. Mm-hmm. And they're able to keep really meticulous records. They're hearing people at all those training programs that I mentioned earlier. They'll send someone from their organization to listen to everybody at all of these premier places where, you know, where they expect to hear, you know, the next generation of performer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so that they do a good job of identifying who they continue to promote and follow.
Okay. Just a question in my mind. Do some of the people who are in the finals, do they get to sing in the chorus in the Met, or do they go on to other places?
The chorus at the Metropolitan Opera is its own entity. So these auditions are really for aspiring soloists. Mm-hmm. That is not to say that some of them may not end up in the chorus. I've auditioned for the Metropolitan Opera chorus myself mm-hmm. in my career.
Okay.
But no, many of them end up in the Metropolitan Opera's Young Artist Training Program, which is called the Lindemann Artist Training Program. And they will take on many of the compromario roles in the operas and covering some of the main stage principal leads.
Okay. I was always interested in that. Having watched the auditions, really give you an insight into not only the toughness of it, but the people who compete. It's quite remarkable. Tell me, how do you prepare for a role? And I'm just in general now. You know, you're Lord Ashton here, but how did you prepare, say, for the role of Lord Ashton? I mean, how did you come to that? That's such a difference from, let's say, Stanley in Streetcar. You know, that's a real switch.
They have some similarities. I mean, they're both kind of wrathful people when they need to be. But I would say generally for any opera role that I undertake, the first step is translating the words that you're saying. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that, you know, I don't do anything else until I have all of the words in English in my head memorized. That you have to take a little break and work on music, you know, interspersed. The music is what really feeds your soul. So when you're in the practice room and you finally get some of these melodies and these great arias and duets under your belt, you're like, wow, that's really nice. And that the whole time that you're in your process, you're continually like kind of just grinding these words, what they mean, into your head, like what could all the different meanings be. And then always for me, something that has a literary source, I'm always reading that. So you know, The Bride of Lammermoor was essential reading, and for mm-hmm. Streetcar Named Desire, the play was essential reading. Mm. And you know, if there's a, for example, for Tosca, I read I guess what was kind of like a synthesis of the times and the composition and a musical analysis and everything, just kind of, it was like a synthesis all based around Tosca. So it was like all things culture in the world at that time of the composition.
Did
but
you
also,
read the play too?
Not the play, no. I mean, the textbook, I guess you could say, is really what it was. Analyzed the play in detail, but I did not read the play itself.
Oh, okay. Well, speaking of that, now, when you did Streetcar, did you... did you watch the movie and watch you know, the performance by Brando?
I purposely I have not made it to this point in my life having not seen Streetcar Named Desire, and I purposely did not watch it actually leading up to that opera because I didn't want to do my best Marlon Brando impression, because nobody is capable of doing that. It would be a fool's errand to try to recreate that performance. He's just a masterpiece. What I did do was read the play and try to shade my own character and color my own character.
Okay. To Lucia, you say you read the background. Now, this is 17th century, right?
It's 18th century. It's just the closing of the 17th right. century. So it's like 1689, I believe, right, the action
right,
opens.
Right. Yeah. So, and that whole milieu that Sir Walter Scott writes in, because, you know, he's written several books that have been put into operas.
Exactly.
Yeah. So he's a very popular. What makes that? I often wonder. Is there something that Donizetti saw that they really like his themes?
I don't really. I know that there have been many. I mean, I think that probably at this point in history, I mean, Lucia di Lammermoor is certainly the most famous.
Yes.
Rossini has La Donna del Lago.
Yes.
And other than that, things have kind of faded away to some degree. But at that time in history, at the beginning of the 1800s, when this was composed, they were setting his books and poems to music all the time. And I really couldn't tell you. I don't know why, but I'm glad that they did, at least in this circumstance.
He was, I guess, certainly he was a very popular author because he was well-read throughout the times. But I often wonder what was the kick here. Certainly, we'll talk about the interplay between the three main characters, because that has a lot to do with it. But before I get, what do you like about performing? Tell me something about what do you like about performing before an audience, particularly in the opera. Say doing this particular role, Lord Ashton.
Well, for me, the most rewarding piece for me is coming to the rehearsal hall and working with your colleagues and creating three-dimensional, real-life relationships with the characters that you're portraying on stage. I mean, it never ceases to amaze me how talented everybody that is working in this field is, and how we can just, shoot ideas around. We'll come up with one thing one day. It'll continue to evolve, and all of a sudden you've got something with real depth, and that is the best part.
Okay.
I guess, and then another probably milestone is when you bring the orchestra in for the first rehearsal to the what's called a Sitzprobe, hearing them for the first time and getting to add your voice to that, all of the textures that are written in. Because when you're rehearsing, you're always just rehearsing with piano, which is good, but it's not able to capture all of the, all the different instrumentation, all of the timbres of all of the instruments that are intertwined. And then when you add an audience, there's certainly like an electricity that you can feel, and when things are going really well, that you don't feel even on the best day in a rehearsal, you don't get that electricity because there's like a little bit of nervousness, and not in a bad way, in a way that's keeping you sharp. It's keeping you alert. It's keeping your adrenaline moving. Mm-hmm. So it's like you're in like a heightened kind of state of being when you're out there, really. And it all culminates, I guess, when the final curtain falls, and you just get rewarded for a job well done. So it's, and then you do it the next day if you're at Opera San Jose.
Okay. How early do you start in preparing for an opera that you're going to do?
Well, this particular opera I've done before, wait a little longer than usual. But I would say to really get a good head start, to have everything in place that you need before you hit that rehearsal hall, I would give myself 2 months minimum. And really, if I had, if I wasn't busy in some other area of my life, I'd like probably three. Just to work on my own, translate on my own, synthesize on my own, then bring in a pianist and work on my own with this pianist, and then finally hit the rehearsal hall with all the other people.
This character you've done before, Correct. But I think when you did Stanley, it was the first time.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
That so one. Now, how long did it take you to do that one?
Yeah, a couple months. A
couple months still.
Couple months on that one. The thing about it, they're kind of similarly sized roles, I would say. I mean, the Sing is a little bit bigger in Stanley, mm-hmm. Stanley's case. But both of these characters have the benefit of not really, they're not the title characters necessarily. Mm-hmm. So kind of the Streetcar Named Desire, really the burden of that show rests on Blanche's shoulders. Mm-hmm. If you need Blanche to be able to do the heavy lifting in that one. Of course, Stanley is a very important character, no doubt about it, but Blanche is definitely the hero. And in this opera, obviously Lucia, you need a super strong Lucia. And so you can always fall back on that really great performance, in our case, by Sylvia Lee, who's a brand new resident this year.
But now Lucia, that's a more stylized role, classic stylized role. Whereas in Stanley, that is a more modernized role. And there's definitely a difference in the mood and the timbre.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
This is kind of a classic melodramatic opera plot.
Yes.
And we're presenting it in such a way, like a very traditional way.
Good.
With that in mind. And A Streetcar Named Desire was certainly more visceral. It was more in your face, just the way the production, people at home saw it and you saw it.
Yeah.
The stage jutted out into the audience way further. The orchestra was actually behind the set. So the whole point of that was to sort of make something that hasn't been seen before and to just get very real with it.
Right. I could talk more about that, but let's go to Lucia. Give us a background to the opera itself. Let's talk about the three characters and your character in particular, but against Lucia and Edgardo. I mean, as I see it, the opera is about the interplay between these three people.
Yes, definitely. So what has happened is sometime before the opera starts, the Ashtons have taken possession or usurped the Ravenswoods out of their family home, which is this castle of Ravenswood. And Edgar, the tenor in the opera, his father has died. And the death of his father, Edgar blames that death on Enrico for having taken his land, taken his titles, taken all of his wealth, and basically banished the Ravenswoods to their old, very old ancestral home of the Wolf's Craig Castle. That's like a dilapidated tower that out by the sea.
Oh, okay.
And so the Ashtons themselves now live in what is the Ravenswood Castle. They live in their old home. So there's before anything even starts, there's a deep hatred between the Ashtons and the Ravenswoods. Mm-hmm. And so in that way, it's very clear right off the bat. And I think this gets to probably what we were talking about earlier, why this novel was maybe so important or so well read, was that there's immediate similarities to Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. So Romeo and Juliet right off the bat.
Right. That's definitely a
yes. And so what happens is, again, before any of the opera even starts, Lucia was walking in the countryside of this Ravenswood estate, and she gets charged by a wild bull that lives in the countryside there. And Edgar happens to be skulking about, as he does, like through the lands that were once his. He sees her about to, you know, be trampled by this bull, and he fires a shot and kills the bull. And they meet each other on that day. And so immediately, it's a very romantic way to meet someone, obviously, mm-hmm. and Lucy mm-hmm. falls in love with Edgar, mm-hmm. and Edgar also falls in love with Lucy, and they continue to meet each other, I can't remember if it's every day or every week or something, at dawn at this fountain mm-hmm. on the Ravenswood mm-hmm. estate. And so
the scene I just played there.
That's where the opera harp starts.
Yeah. And the harp, beautiful harp intro to
exactly.
that. Yeah.
Right. So Edgar says that, you know, I promise myself to you, we're gonna vow to be married, but he has to leave. He goes to France because it's the whole thing is set against a backdrop of political turmoil that the opera isn't really necessarily touching on in the same way that the novel goes into great detail about.
Mm-hmm.
So he has to leave for France. He's taking care of matters overseas. And in the meantime, Enrico is my character, and he needs, because of the way the political climate is changing and his fortunes are sort of waning, he needs to marry Lucy off to a wealthy suitor, someone that can mm-hmm. bring him back to power.
Mm-hmm.
So the personage of Arturo Bucklaw mm-hmm. is brought in, and he's a wealthy noble with a respected name, and so that's someone that he can attach his household to and regain the prestige that they used mm-hmm. to have. But on the day of the wedding, Edgar shows up and curses Lucia and sees the marriage contract signed and says, "Is this your signature?" And she says, "Yes." And so he throws her ring on the floor that she promised him mm-hmm. and just swears revenge on the
I'm
whole.
I'm going to play that sextet when you're done. So that's the famous sextet.
Exactly. And then there's a scene that is often cut from the opera called the Wolf's Crag scene, where Enrico and Edgar meet each other and challenge each other to a duel for having we're going to finally have it out with this, all of the long-standing feud between the families. It's often cut. We're doing it in our production here, so it's actually a real treat Kirk Doherty is the tenor who's singing it with me to be able to tackle this really great duet, nice scene.
Oh.
Filled with a lot of vitriol and sort of just adrenaline. So it's a fun scene.
Great.
And then so as that scene is supposedly taking place, Lucy is then going to her marriage bed with Arturo and not able to take this. She's been pressed into this marriage. She did not want it. So she stabs Arturo. She goes crazy and stabs him and kills him. And then wanders out into the middle of the party, the marriage, the wedding reception, and everybody sees her full of blood with this bloody knife in her hand, and she has what is a very, iconic moment in operas, the Lucia's mad scene.
Right, exactly. One of the great moments, I might add, that I went back and refreshed myself and saw the great Sutherland.
So wow. many. I mean, almost any soprano of note has done something, has done a Lucia Madsen.
That is amazing. It's the thing that always comes to me, though, is that it wasn't uncommon for women to be used as barter.
Oh, of course not.
In marriages.
No.
And I guess it always seemed to me to be a little strange that Lucia fought this when indeed that's what all of the women were used. They were used as chattel.
Of course.
In many respects. And the fact that she fought it made her a little unique.
Yeah, exactly. Well, she had already fallen deeply in love with Edgar. And, there's a little bit more to it, the whole depth of that plot. In the novel, if you're very interested, go read The Bride of Lammermoor, because you have to simplify everything down for the opera, and that's the librettist's job, and he did a wonderful thing. But it's a calculated maneuver, in the novel.
Hmm.
The way that Lord Ashton dangles Lucia in front of Edgar's face, it's more Ashton brings it upon himself. More than it just kind of happening without his knowledge.
Okay.
But anyway, Edgar finds himself the next morning in the graveyard of his ancestors where the duel with Enrico is supposed to take place. And he arrives there early. And as he's there, a funeral procession for Lucia, who has died after her mad scene, comes through. And they tell him that Lucia is dead and not being able to face that, he stabs himself and he goes himself. So again, it's very Shakespearean, Romeo and Juliet.
Yes, I love it.
How does Lucia die?
Just from the term. Shock. Yeah, exactly. The shock of it all. Mm-hmm.
Before we get too much further, because we're really having a lot of time, Let's talk about how we can see this wonderful performance.
Okay, great. It starts September 10th. It opens September 10th and then again on the 11th and then runs for two consecutive weekends then after that. So it's the Thursday and the Sunday, the next weekend, and Friday and Sunday, the weekend thereafter. Whatever those dates are, it can all be found on operasj.org.
Good. I was gonna say, how do we get ticket information? I've got the 10th, the 11th, the 15th, the 18th, the 23rd, and the 25th.
Exactly.
And I'm gonna see it on the 25th.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good.
I'm really looking forward. Now, so that's the dates. And again, how do we get tickets?
Operasj.org. I just discovered myself is that there's a brand new ticketing system at the Opera this year. Beautiful interface, and you'll get e-tickets if you want them. Of course, you can print them yourself. You can still have them. You can pick them up at Wilco, all the usual ways, but now with e-ticketing and some new technologies that'll make going to the Opera probably easier for you.
Wonderful, wonderful. And of course, the other grand thing about going to the Opera is you see it at the California Theater, and I don't know, I've been there many times now, but each time I go, I really love the ambiance of the theater. You just can't beat it.
It's a beautiful thing to behold once you walk in. Yes. And you just see the gilded lobbies and just the size of the stage, which is actually great because you can make a grand opera there, but still feel like you're close enough to see faces even from the upper deck. So,
and where is this located?
California Theater's on 2nd.
It's on First Street.
Downtown
San Jose.
Yeah, it backs on the, comes out on the other side too, though. But you're right.
Yes.
First Street is the entrance.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm always used to going out 2nd because I want to beat the crowd.
Oh, there you go.
You're right. But you're right. The entrance is on First Street, right across. By the way, parking is always available. It's right across the street.
Right.
So it's very convenient, and some very good eating places downtown around that place too. So, again, this is September the 10th, 11th, 15th, 18th, 23rd, 25th for Lucia de Lammermoor by Gaetano Donizetti. Before I let you go, Matthew, is this your third?
This is the start of my third season.
So
yeah.
This is theoretically your last season with Opera San Jose, or will you be with us?
It could
again?
Be. No, I really have no idea.
Okay.
It's too early to get started and wrapping my head around all those things, just focusing on.
Okay, is it possible that you might do another?
I suppose it could be, but haven't thought that far ahead at this point.
Okay. The reason I ask is because it seems like the normal tenure for most of the singers has been 3 years, and I'm really sorry about that, because some really fine singers that I liked have gone on, although you're happy for them because they've gone on to other opera companies, so it's not, you know, not as if they're fading or anything.
No, exactly.
I miss them not being here, you know, with Opera San Jose.
Yep, it's a terrific place to be. I'm very happy to be here myself. So.
Right. Now, before I let you go, what else are you going to be doing? It seems as if you're going to be in most of the productions.
Yes, all of them.
Including
Silent Night.
Silent Night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, next will be Barber of Seville.
Yes.
And I will have half the performances for Barber of Seville as Figaro.
Okay.
And
that is also an old
Certainly a classic.
Everybody, for you, yeah. But you've done it before, too.
One other time.
Yes.
One other time. And the other three performances will be taken by a new resident baritone, Brian Meyer.
Okay.
And then at the beginning of the new year, we will have the West Coast premiere of Silent Night.
Yes.
Which is
looking forward to that.
Award-winning new opera that was premiered at the Minnesota Opera. And I'll be taking the role of Lieutenant Gordon in that. There's one of three principal kind of lieutenants that barter this peace on Christmas Eve during the war. And then wrapping the season up with La Boheme, which is an opera that I've done several times.
Right.
That's always as Marcello.
Favorite. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You guys, yeah. People still like to see it. So it's an opera that's performed all the time. It's one of the top five operas in performance. And It just seems people never get tired of it.
No. If you haven't seen it, go see it and you'll know why.
Yes, yes. Well, I think Opera San Jose has a very nice production of it. That's too, you know, that's quite
I think if you were thinking about it, now you've made up your mind.
Right. In my opinion, the perfect first opera, if for anyone who's listening who hasn't been before, and probably one that you can take, maybe like a 12 to 15-year-old child, too, if you have some children that you want to expose to the art form. It's most the majority of the opera is very joyous, and there's just a very touching kind of tragic way that it ends, but not in like a bloody revenge type way, just a...
Lucia.
Right, exactly. Just a very touching,
I always like to say
sentimental
that,
way.
It's the arias or the arias you can hum and sing.
Exactly.
Yeah, as is most of Puccini's stuff. Okay, once more, September 10th, September the 11th, September the 15th, 18th, 23rd, and 25th. Lucia de Lammermoor, tickets online at
operasj.org.
.org, right. And you'll be seeing Matthew singing the role of Lord Ashton. And believe me, I've seen him twice now, and he's great.
Thank you.
You really will like him. I'm looking forward to the production. And let's, you said a little bit about this, but I'm going to go out playing that sextet. Again,
beautiful.
Set that up for me, please.
Well, what has happened is Edgardo has just burst into the wedding. And it overwhelms Lucy, makes her faint. That these all her lie, like the kind of the hidden betrothal, and her brother's finding out about it. So she collapses, and it brings all of these people kind of into like a standstill for a minute, and they're all living in this same musical atmosphere, but singing about their own, you know, inner thoughts about everything that's going on.
It's really great because it's so characteristic of the sextets, quintets, and so forth, in that everybody's singing and they're all singing about different things, but they're all singing in tune, in harmony.
Yeah,
only in opera.
I suppose that's right, and that's why we love it.
That's right. Thank you so much, Matthew, for coming by. I'm going to look forward to
seeing
you.
Thank you. I really enjoyed the interview as well.
Yes, yes. Susan, help me here. So let's listen to the sextet from Lucia de Lammermoor by Gaetano. Am I saying Donizetti?
Let's go.